the first session I attended was, it was called Cosmo Trends, and it was the top trends that they're predicting for the next 5 years. And then the second session was about accessibility in beauty industry. And it was everything from like what you think of accessibility in terms of like physical accessibility to social accessibility as well. Welcome to this week's episode of Beauty Babble. Today, I'll be sharing insights from the Cosmo Prof show in Las Vegas. Suzanne, how are you this morning?
I'm okay. I'm just, you know, I'm going to have to live this through you.
Yes.
I didn't get to go.
I know. So this show was in July. So we're recording in August.
A couple weeks ago,
right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And this is the Cosmo Prof North America. And I attended two informational sessions that were super interesting. And I wanted to share it with you and our listeners. The first session I attended was, it was called Cosmo Trends, and it was the top trends that they're predicting for the next 5 years. And these trends are not pulled out of thin air, but it's really based on what they see brands are producing for products, what they're approaching them with. And then the second session I attended was about accessibility in beauty industry. And it was everything from like what you think of accessibility in terms of like physical accessibility to social accessibility as well. So that one was really interesting.
So let's talk about that first one. What are the trends? What are they saying?
Okay. So
I'm always curious about that. That's something where we've tried to highlight in our discussions so that we can help our listeners keep on track and stay on top of it, right? Because it's such a competitive market.
Totally. And you know what? There was one that surprised me, maybe a couple, but there was a few that really weren't really surprising because we've seen these trends come up, right? So the first one is you inclusively, and this is beauty that works for textured hair and melanin-rich skin.
Better.
They're very
good. I know, but they're actually just by what they were named, it draws the awareness and attention to go to the workshop or to listen, because a lot of the times when you go to these shows, they're brand related and they're actually selling you something. So it's really good when you can go for actual information. So tell us more, Jermaine.
Okay. So they say that Black U.S. consumers' beauty spending rose by $1.3 billion between 2022 and 2023. And the global hair braiding market is projected to reach a value of $625 million by 2032. And among the needs that brands are zeroing in on are the requirements of braided hair, scalp care for textured hair, and hyperpigmentation. And I think this is interesting because it's refreshing in a way, right? Because it's finally textured hair. It handles differently. Like my hair it's really thick. It's a blend of like wavy, some curly. And anytime, I remember when I was younger and I'd go get my hair done, they would always... Or when they try to brush it's like, you cannot brush my hair when it's dry. It's like, it just becomes a mess. So there was things that really, there was a lack in knowledge, and I don't even have like extremely textured hair, right? So I could just feel this being such a refreshing thing for people.
Mm-hmm. The big market. And you were saying that was the Black population in the U.S.? It was based on that, hey?
It was based on that.
And then you think of the skin itself, like it's a tricky thing when you get into the higher Fitzpatrick's of how to deal with it and how it can go very wrong, you know? So thinking about what you're doing with your clientele. And I think this came up in one of our podcasts, how we were speaking with one of our guests and they said that the esthetician didn't know what to do with her skin because of her Fitzpatrick. And that concerned the client. So it's a great way to kind of remind our professionals, if you keep reaching out and learning and growing with it so that you stay on top of these things, because it is different. It's no different than you have someone like Fitzpatrick one.
Yeah.
So they're almost the one end to the other on that spectrum. So they're a lot more sensitive to having adverse effects, if you wish.
That's true. And it was the show floor, like where brands are presenting their products. There was a whole section dedicated to Black owned brands and skincare lines, hair care lines. So it really was highlighted and brought to the forefront, which again, makes it easier to connect with, to learn about, and brings it center stage.
Right. And this is another avenue that maybe people haven't thought about, actually, all those considerations when you're dealing with, you know, it's like we sometimes forget why the Fitzpatricks are so important.
Yeah.
But even in the permanent makeup world, right? It's the same thing. Lip blushing is huge because they tend to have a darker lip and you become like this expert. You know, it's your niche that you can nail those colors. Very unique. I find it very interesting myself, but you know, or you have people who are doing artificial nails. You know, their nail plates are different, a little bit different in color. So I think it's being really just in tune with those diversities in people, that it's not all for one.
Yeah.
I think that's, a lot of people know that, but I think it's just a good refresher, right? And how our industry is becoming more inclusive that way, like really gearing into specifics. It's actually not a very new trend. I mean, here in Edmonton, Canada, that's where we are, we actually had a big weekend workshop of different vendors at the YMCA, local YMCA, which I work part-time there, and it was the U of A dermatology department that was focusing on the Black communities here in Edmonton to help them with their diet. So they had nutritionists, they had psychologists, they had the dermatologist side of it, when they recognized it's so different and there's not enough information out there. So, and this was 3 years ago now. So it's not new. I think we just keep hearing things and reminding ourselves. It's good reminders, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So the next one we have is the youth vote. So this one, I don't know why I was shocked by this. Nobody I talked to was surprised. So this is about Gen Alpha.
What age group is that?
Let's see.
I don't know. If you're not sitting down.
It's my kid.
It's your kid, yeah.
Both of them. Oh my God. Okay, born from 2010 to 2024.
It's a pretty big range.
It is. So it's like, and some of those, when they talk about like the generation breakdown, give or take a few years, some of them have like different ranges. But
you're really talking about the 12-year-old to the 18-year-old? Is that fair to say?
No.
It's older.
It's younger.
Really?
Like 12. So Zoe, my daughter's 12 and she was born in 2012. So 14 to like 8, 7, 6 year olds. This is the range. It says 2024, but I don't think a baby's got any buying power. So it says
You know what? So I'm going to say something, because moms, like parents, are out looking for, you know, what's healthy for their babies to put in the bath, put in on their skins.
And right, actually.
So I guess it's not necessarily that the little ones like that have the buying power, but it's the parents who are focusing on it, right?
And I think that is actually the point where I think why this is a trend, because I think Gen Alpha's parents they're more in a place where they can afford luxuries maybe, or they're more conscious of organic products or prioritizing different things, right? So I think that lends to what is happening with this generation. And so what they're saying is Gen Alpha's economic footprint is set to reach $5.46 trillion by 2029. So almost as much as Gen Z and millennials combined spending power.
Oh my God.
There are almost 10,000 posts tagged Sephora Kids on TikTok.
Oh, that would be interesting to see.
Right? So it's also here in California, a bill to ban the sale of over-the-counter skincare products labeled as anti-aging or containing vitamin A and its derivatives is said to be heard by the state's committee. And I think this is passed because younger kids are purchasing these products.
Because the demand.
Because of the demand. Yep.
Wow. Retinols?
Isn't that crazy? So they did feature some, they also like showcase some products during the session that are like brands that are catering to Gen Z, or no, Gen Alpha, sorry. There was one, they called it Bright Girl, and this one's a moisturizer. They have another cleanser, and this one is called Your Skin Stuff, and the packaging on it, it's like really funky and colorful.
Of course.
Right? Oh my gosh, this one's really cute. This is from Oren Medical, and it's Superstar Pimple Patches, and they're star-shaped. And they come in this really cute, like, yellow case.
Wow.
Okay, now we know why Gen Alpha spending power, because I'm like, I would totally buy that for my kids.
Right? See? Who's creating it? Doreen?
Totally. And then this one, actually, I did pick this up for my kids. This is Talomi. It's makeup, and it's eyes, lip, and cheek. So it's this makeup stick, and you can use it either as for the eyes, the lips, or the cheek. And they're so cute. Lots of really good colors, and then like good stuff in there for them.
Nice. So Bright Girl is created by a dermatologist in the USA.
Yeah.
And that's because of her kids. I just read her story.
Oh, awesome.
Briefly, I had to look and say, what would make dermatologists go out and cater to this? Obviously, got it now. Wow. Very interesting.
Right.
So food for thought for people when they're looking at things. Well, we've met some professionals that have talked about what's going on with their kids and they're throwing spa parties and little gift bags. Mm-hmm. And he said, hashtag Sephora. Is that what it was? Hashtag Sephora?
Sephora kids.
Kids, right. So it's like, wow. So if you're looking at your clients have kids, is that something that you would even want to explore? Right. How do you bring that in? And in fact, when I look back, when I had my spa, I had moms then wanting to do birthday parties. And I was like, oh my gosh, what do I do with 8-year-olds? Like, you know, because it was more of that anti-aging and everything like that. So, you know, we played with it, and we did one group. I brought in stuff that they made their scrubs with their flavors.
Yeah.
A little table. And then now it's all coming back to me. But they got to pick which one they wanted us to use on them for their feet.
Oh, that's such a good idea. I should get you to put my daughter's next birthday. You're so good with your ideas.
Well, and it's like, how do you do this? So I'm like, oh, what can we do for these? They're, mm-hmm. I mean, kids, right? So we can't be too aggressive. We can't do too much. They love the paraffin. Well, that's not harmful. It's just hydrating. And, you know, a scrub is okay for the skin. And, you know, we're just being really hyper aware of those things and then telling them how to take care of their nails. And so when you go back, that's actually a long time ago. I'm not going to say how long ago that was, but it's a long time ago. So it kind of makes sense. It was happening then, but it was very, very new. Cause I remember that, like, oh, kids, like most stuff. I don't want to deal with kids.
And I think it's more like, it's definitely more mainstream now.
Yeah. Way more common.
But I think it's also good to contact whatever your skincare brand is and see their educator, like what of the products is suitable for younger skin. Mm-hmm. Because even with my kids, like I've gotten stuff from Beauty Cult for them, but Tara's been like, okay, here, this is good for their skin, right? Like kind of told certain products that would be suitable for their skin from Bernard Cassier. Obviously not everything is going to work on younger skin, but I would definitely see what you already have and how can you do a little package, a market. It could be just a marketing thing where you pull a couple products and this could be like your back to school kit or something like that. I don't know.
Oh, so that's a great idea. Back to school.
Right. Thinking outside, thinking like, what can you do with what you have, as well as what, like if you're exploring getting new things, keeping that in mind. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I think it's definitely gotten me to look at my spending habits towards my kids. And I'm like, okay.
Cool. That's an interesting one.
Yeah. Okay. So the next one is called Private Matters. This says the intimate care market was valued at $40 billion in 2023 and is expected to grow at a 4.5% rate between 2024 and 2032. The global sexual wellness market is expected to exceed 90 billion by 2029. That's insane. Natural ingredients are taking center stage in this new wave of elevated intimate care with actives such as organic skullcap, probiotic blends, and organic coconut oil. Some of the products. So we have, this one is hydrating intimate cleansing gel. And this one is, it's from China, Hong Kong, and it's just labeled intimate care, personal care product. The next one is a hygiene hero. This one I got some comments. It's a Vipstick serum. This is from the US. The company is Berry White. So maybe, I don't, it looks like a little, you know, those deodorant, those round deodorant tubes. It kind of looks like that.
Like a deodorant stick?
Yeah, it looks like a deodorant stick. And then the next one is called Coco Wow. This is from the US as well. And I don't know. So this one, I don't have as much information what exactly this product does, if it's a cleanser or okay. What. But I thought the Vipstick one was interesting.
I guess when they're creating this, you've got to look at that. Like it's almost like even like an acne stick on the pimple, like they're rubbing on it. There must be ingredients in it to keep the pH proper and the bacterial aspect of things.
Because that was the first thing that came to my mind is that doesn't sound sanitary.
Yeah. I would imagine though that they would, I guess something that if someone's looking at doing that, because I remember, I'm sure it's still there at one of the distributors, that was a hot commodity back in the day also, of everything to do with the private areas. And it was more natural, it wasn't harmful. That's the thing, is people are demanding it not to be the chemically, douching days, right? Like that, they know that's not good for women because it alters all the microbiome in that area. So I think if you're a person who's, let's say, doing Brazilian, is this something of another nature that you could talk to your clients about? Right.
That's probably a really good idea. I just looked it up just because I was a little bit curious. And it's supposed to, like, it's for soothing, hydrating, and protecting the labia and surrounding skin. And the directions for use is obviously they recommend that you do it on clean, like, 3 to 4 times on clean labia and clitoris. So after the shower or something, but 3 to 4 times, well, you're going to have to clean yourself in between.
Yeah, it's not really a new product, but I guess as we keep looking and growing in this industry, people are just becoming more focused, aware of self-care in all aspects to everything, I guess.
It has a probiotic blend. It has ashwagandha. It has a peptide complex. So they're really looking at like a more natural.
Yeah. And for that membrane too, right? I mean, you can't just use anything down there.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, so maybe the, waxing people, body care professionals, that type of thing. Like maybe these are things that you got to look at. What do you have currently in your supplies you never thought to be creative? I mean, like I look at Ferritin 12 in the US, they have their own, vaginal facial.
That's
because of the waxing. Because of the Brazilian, they're trying to keep the area very healthy, and they recognize there's a membrane involved, but yet, the skin itself, ingrown hairs and all those things, right? So it's how to take care of the all skin areas, I guess, right? So yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. And they call it the credential cleanse.
Yes, they do.
So in case somebody's looking for it, it's,
Yeah.
I think we did a show on it actually.
Oh, yes. When we talk about Brazilian, you're right. We did talk about facial. Mm-hmm. And actually, it does help the client if they've got the ingrowns or they're breaking out. And it's such a quick, like right then and there, people feel different. They feel the soothing aspect, the calming aspect. They feel better, but they still need to do the home care side. So you got to teach them to keep up with it for home, right?
Yeah. Okay. Before we move on, I was curious. I'm like, what is this? Coco, wow, why does it not say what it is? It's an intimacy oil. So it's kind of like a natural lubricant.
Okay.
Okay. Curiosity has been answered. All right. The next one is Life in Motion. And this one is about, you know, active brands that are catering towards active lifestyles, on the go lifestyles. The global athleisure, that was a hard word to say, athleisure personal care market is estimated to be worth $203 billion in 2024. And it's going to rise to $299 billion by 2029.
So help define what is, who are they, who's that niche that they're after?
Athleisure. I don't know. Let's see if it comes up. Hold on. Products and ingredients that can prevent breakouts caused by sweating while working out are one of the sector's core areas. Also key are on-the-go formats that allow consumers to have serious skincare and body care with them to the gym or to use during workouts. So that's
kind of that's interesting, because there's more and more from the fitness side of the world, the demand of, they were talking about how much like chemicals are in those really popular brands. I'm not going to say them, you know, mm-hmm. what they are for workouts. A lot of people in this industry wear them as part of their uniform because it's so comfortable.
Oh, okay.
They're not natural, what do you call it? Not ingredients, but the fabrics.
Fibers.
Actually, yeah, they're actually like a chemical produced. It's like a plastic. Oh. Yeah, I was like, what? I did not know my leggings could be plastic. So yeah, when you look at, yeah, when you look at, you know, they really market the fact that awareness about your plastics. Are you warming your food up in it? What are you storing in your plastic? What are you drinking your water bottle out of? But it's in our clothes. So when they're coming to this, I guess I understand what they're talking about. And underwear, the athletes' bras or actually just bras, right? Like all the clothing, mm-hmm. there's a lot of chemicals in it. And that's why they keep it so cheap. Well, I shouldn't say that. Scary. They don't sell it very cheap, but they can they can make it pretty cheap. Interesting.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the products that they featured for this one. Well, one of them is Canadian, actually. I think this is one of the few that was in Canada, and it's called Will Perform Epsom Salt Shower Stick.
Oh.
So that's one. I'm trying to like talk and Google it.
Yeah. Well, and I guess when you look at, if you're on the go, you're going to look for the quick travel size. You're not going to be carrying your big bottles around. So when you go into some of these retail places where your clients go, you know, I've heard of a couple, and I remember going in going, oh, all these flavors and scents, and you know what I mean? And it's like, oh my God, this is, I can't even be in there. It's so strong. And it's so artificial.
This is really for like sore muscles. So they're saying sore muscles meet your match. So it's you use it in the shower, which makes sense because you're on the go. Maybe you're showering at the gym. You can't like soak your body in Epsom salts. So this is a kind of answers that niche.
Oh, like, that's really cool.
Packaging is really cool.
When you look at it, there's a few brands we know already that they have the anti-inflammatory, the leg draining cream, anti-soreness, the muscle fatigue. But I think what we forget is we're thinking, oh, the professional body treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, how does that correlate at home for these clients?
100%. And I think that's why, even with the last one, I'm like, ask the brand that you're working with, because I think a lot of this is really about what you name it. If you can't change the names of the brand, but maybe you can make your own little kits, or because it's really about how it's marketed and what it's geared towards, right?
So it's always a good reminder. I think we keep saying this, talk to your brand,
mm-hmm.
what your distributor, what do they have currently, and how can they help support you with it before you go and buy a new product? Not always do you have to go out and buy it. Mm-hmm. Just a show, and then you're really like enticed, right, Dream? And you're like, ooh, that looks good. I'll buy that.
That's me. I'm like, oh, it's shiny. I'll get it. Don't do what I do. So, okay, I'm going to go through some of the other products under this Life in Motion. One of them is a pre-workout anti-pollution serum. Literally, it's like, oh, I need this. This is a powerhouse serum. It has antioxidants. So I think it's really interesting, because even I was with Tara at the show and she was like, oh, but that's like Tewell's detox. I'm like, oh yeah, I should probably get that. So it's just like, again, see what brands you're working with and what do they have that can meet the need of this trend. And the next one is from Switzerland and it's a body deodorant. Okay, so that's the Life in Motion. And then the last one is the Senscape. So I like think of this, as soon as she said it in the present, I'm like, oh, I think they mean holistic. So this is how I'm thinking of it, but I'll read out their thing. So multi-sensory products are important to consumers who want to experience a more holistic, indulgent form of beauty. Future market insights forecast that sensory modifier market is valued at 6,092 million in 2024 and will rise to 9,977 million by 2029, reflecting the crucial role of these additives in enhancing products' appeal and sensory experience. Among interesting textures and concepts are, you'll like this, solid to oil formats, balm to oil to scrub cleansers, and silky feeling emollient. So it feels like a little bit of a, you know, play, they're playful, they're changing in their texture. The first one is a gelid solid lip oil. It's makeup. Mm-hmm. Another makeup, dewy jelly lip, skincare. Oh, this one is the one they were talking about. This skincare, it's from South Korea. And that's the one that goes from an oil. It goes from an oil to a scrub. Balm to oil to scrub cleanser. And then the last one is an anti-age light cream. Which again, I think all of these have that play on texture and the changing texture. Oh, and there's a cleanser here from a Canadian brand as well. And this one is again something that it changes in texture as the cleanser. So these are things we've experienced with brands that we've worked with. And it's really, for me, it highlights the explaining things to your clients, right?
When you hear about these things, like when I would try to keep up with what's going on when I had my business, I would listen to it and always look at, okay, what do I have already? And I just got to reword it.
Yeah.
Or package it, like you said, differently. Or so you don't have to go out and buy the new product because it's the trend.
And I think it is really important to just stay in the know. Knowing and planning, right? You don't have to jump on the trend now, but it can be something where you just keep your finger on the pulse of what's happening. If it's something you can plan towards, see what your clients are asking for, and just informed.
Yeah, and you're saying the holistic side, it's not going away. We've been saying this for how long? You got to look at it. So if you are a lash tech, how do you make it more holistic? What are the sensories that you can target? The visual? Yeah. The hearing, you know, the smell, and what's the taste or and touch.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Very interesting stuff.
Good to know we're on it. Yeah. Okay. So I think that was it for the trends session. And then the other session I attended was on accessibility. And this was actually research that was done by the Fashion Institute of Technology. And there were three different presenters. And they were from like bigger cosmetic brands, but they were doing, and then it was in partnership too with the Fashion Institute of Technology. I think there was some universities involved. Mm-hmm. And so they had kind of broke it down in terms of accessibility, but it talked about economic, social, and inclusivity impacts in the beauty industry. Mm-hmm. The first one was on enhancing accessibility for all people when it comes to products. So looking at packaging, and this is really geared more towards those who are making the product, right? Because as estheticians and professionals, you might not have as much control over how your product is packaged, mm-hmm. right? But some things that we're focused on was for folks who are visually impaired, like differentiating products, whether it's through symbols, like raised symbols on the packaging. For folks who are neurodiverse, looking at just not having overly stimulating packaging. And another one was looking at how packaging is, or bottles, like how they're shaped and how it affects people with limited mobility and dexterity. And it pointed out to a few brands like Fenty and Rare Beauty that are already have changed the way that their bottles are packaged. I thought it was really cool because for me, it was some things that I never thought of. And I think a lot of us seldom think of these things if we're not experiencing them. So it was interesting to kind of get that insight into just how things are packaged. And then the other thing that they talked about too was not just in terms of the products, but in terms of your, they called it the omni-channel experience. It said 98% of websites don't reach accessibility standards. So looking at your website, your product descriptions, and just how you are marketing yourself and your brand. So there's a lack of representation, overgeneralization, and the idea that having images of diversity is not enough, but it being like part of your values and mission as an organization. Mm-hmm. I think for this can trickle down to everybody in terms of how you market yourself too, right? Like thinking about how you are, how is your website? How are you marketing yourself in your place, like your studio or your spa, or and online too?
Especially online, because it's huge.
True. Okay. And so I left this to the last because I found it the most interesting, which was they called it social accessibility. And it's addressing holistic wellness in women's lives. And the speaker for this one like came up and she, what did she say? She said, puberty, vagina. She's just, am I making you uncomfortable? And I'm like, no. But, and the reason she was talking about bringing this stuff up was the fact that there's not enough focus on women's health and education and research. And she said something like 1% of health research is geared towards women's health issues. And doctors spend this is according to the speaker, doctors get 2 hours of education on menopause in their 4 years of medical school, which is insane. So they broke it down into the different phases of a woman's life in terms of puberty, fertility, and menopause. Mm. And menopause being the one that gets the least amount of attention, information, but even some of the other ones, like she had mentioned, everybody knows that Rogaine is everybody knows what Rogaine does. It's like, how many brands were created to address women's hair loss after pregnancy, right? So all these things that are geared towards men are not equally geared towards women. She talked about, she focused a lot on menopause. She said hormone conditions are underfunded and under-researched. Mm-hmm. 72% of women feel brands should support women's health. Where was the other numbers I was telling? 42% of women who go through menopause experience depression. 83% feel ashamed. And she talked about how women who are going through menopause because of the depression and everything that they're going through are more likely to leave the workforce at that stage in their life because there isn't enough information out there, right? So they don't have access to information. Doctors are not bringing up menopause. They don't talk about it. It's not easily available.
Well, they're not given the information.
But they don't know.
No.
And there's, yeah. I was listening to a podcast on this subject too, because I got really interested in it. And the doctor on there was saying that, you know, menopause is very individual. Like everybody goes through the different symptoms and doctors are used to a list, a check, you know, like this represents this.
Because that's how they're trained.
And that, you know, because they're not given enough information on menopause, whenever they get these symptoms, they're like redirecting it to something else and not putting it all together and understanding that it is, you know, this part. And I feel like women always get, you know, shrugged off, you know, like, oh, you're just being moody or
emotional.
You're being overly sensitive. And it's like, these are actual hormonal crap going on inside of us. Like, it's just not given the respect and the consideration that it really should.
No, they're not even looking at the fact that premenopause is starting in 30 year olds, because you're spending 10 to 15 years in it. So now you look, why does this matter to us? I guess you could say the beauty professionals, because of their skin. When you think of their skin and their overall health, even their muscles, like everything about it, you're catering to their well-being in a sense from the outside in, if you wish. But when you're targeting, you know, like you talked about the holistic side, you talked about all these things are a matter of that mental health side, which you can do so much for them.
Yeah.
So much for them. Like, and you look at the trends of all the little handheld tools and all these little things people are doing at home, and they're bringing light, red light therapy home so that they can use it on themselves every day. Because we lose, what percentage of collagen? I used to have this numbers on my head.
Yeah. But
it's huge amount. Once menopause hits, it is, I hate to say it, but it's just like a downward.
So really, why? And this is a good thing you bring up, like why we should care about it, because the point of that is that this is a stage of life that the beauty industry should be a part of. Mm-hmm. That women, that 7 in 10 women are looking for brands that address their hormonal needs. And then that hormonal wellness, right? That holistic thing that you were talking about. So in part of looking for trends and what's coming, I think that as part of it, like brands that are kind of incorporating hormonal wellness into their products.
Or your equipment.
In their equipment. Exactly.
Equipment, your galvanics, your, like, you think of all the different, you know, investments you've made as a beauty professional. Do you have it right sitting there that you haven't plugged in for a while or charged up in it because you've been focusing on your microneedling, which is awesome. But do you add the LEDs to that treatment? What do you do to change it so you target that? And, menopause is huge. It's just a big thing. I've seen the difference after my operation last year. The texture of the skin, the elasticity of the skin, the density of the skin. And it's not just on the face, the neck. It's like your whole body, muscular wise. Like, there's so much involved. And we want more. We're trying to do what we can to stay youthful and, you know, not saying that, you know, I've got to look like I was 30 years old, but I still want to have taut skin as long as I can, you know, and have the natural aging happen, which is fine. But we're challenging what that is considered now, I think. What's the natural aging?
Yeah.
When we have help and tools and treatments and, there's lots of things out there.
And I think the power that estheticians or the role that they can play can also be the educational part. Like explaining to, because education and information is one of the things that is not easily available. Well, I mean, it's out there, but you have to do your own research and always start from scratch, right? That you can self-educate, I would think. I don't know where they would get the esthetician would get the information, but understanding what happens to the skin and the body as it goes through menopause and sharing that information with your clients. On an information sharing, not as a,
not a prescription stuff.
Prescription based, but, you know, hey, have you thought of this or whatever?
Well, if you correlate it, an antioxidant, I don't know, you have berries in your face mask, right? Or vitamin C. It's like, so when you think about food, what are you ingesting that you why don't you search that? Go on Pinterest and say antioxidant, recipes or... And help give them ideas. Or do you know of someone that you follow and you can share their recipe? And just remember copyright, but that you don't take it as your own. Yeah. But if you're just sharing information, I think it's a valuable tool. And menopause, people are thinking they're like, okay, my age and older. Nah, starting younger, you guys. In your 30s, you don't realize. After babies, you start very quickly. And some have... full-on menopause before they're even 40 now.
And it says that perimenopause is rarely ever discussed. I don't think I heard of perimenopause until recently. And I'm like, what? Oh, no. Whoops.
It's the preventative side, right? So, there's some great information out there and how you can, but you have to be inquisitive and ask why and keep asking why. And then you learn more and more. And then you can, like I said, you be a little more creative on your services and the information education you give your clients. It can't just be about gossip or I don't know, like, or, you know, summer vacations. It's summer right now, so I'll just say that. But, and it's good to have those conversations, but remember they're coming to you for a service. So educate them on something new that you discovered.
Absolutely.
That's what I always have said, to me, knowledge is power.
Yeah.
Just because you didn't get to the show, like, I'm like, Dreen, tell me what you learned. And then Tara on so she can share. Yeah. Exactly. Awesome. Thanks,
Dreen. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll be back next week.
Thanks for listening to Beauty Babble.